last week on the topic of the blessing of the tithe. We discussed last week the fact that God does watch what we do with money as well as many other things in life. And we used in Luke 16 where Christ sat there watching people as they put their money into the temple and commended the widow for her mite, her small amount that she gave, and it's what was in her heart that really counted. And we also talked about the fact that God claims the tithe. Leviticus chapter 27 in verse 30 says, "All the tithe of the land, whether seed of the land or fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It's holy to the Lord." And then it says that I have given it to the Levite for the work they do for me in the temple. We ended up with Matthew 23:23. It says, "How horrible it will be for you teachers of the law, of Pharisees and hypocrites. It's true you give God 10% of everything you have. You even give him 10% of your spices, mint, dill, cumin. You forget about the more important things of the law, being fair to other people, giving mercy and faith." Tithing isn't the biggest issue before God. It's what's in our hearts and our minds and how we worship and obey him and treat other people. But he said you should always tithe, but remember to do the more important things too. So sometimes we, you know, get focused like the Pharisees did on the letter of the law more than what the intent of God's law is. And we discuss the fact that Hebrews 7 shows the superiority that Jesus Christ has over the Levitical priesthood. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 7 to pick up kind of where we left off last time. Hebrews chapter 7. You know, there are people who say that Christ did away with everything. When Christ died, do whatever you want to. And that's literally how people take things nowadays. This afternoon, we talk about Thanksgiving. I've got a few things I'm very thankful for, and it'll tie in with this a little bit. But Hebrews chapter 7, verse 1 says, "This Melchizedek, king of Salem, the priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him." And so Melchizedek was actually the Word who came down and lived as a human being, but he was still spirit. And I don't know how God does that, but he can do anything he wants, obviously. So it says, "To whom Abraham gave a tenth part of all," first being translated King of Righteousness, that's Melchizedek, "and then the King of Salem," meaning the King of Peace, "without father, without mother, without genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life." There's only one being that describes, and that is God and the Word. And it says, "but made like the Son of God, remains a priest continually." Now, people say, well, and I read last time some people's view of tithing, and they said, well, that was just for the Israelites. Well, actually, Abraham was not an Israelite. Abraham was God's servant, and he gave tithes to Melchizedek, who was the priest of the Most High God. So before the Levitical priesthood was established, Abraham tithed. So to say, well, that was just for the Levitical priesthood and just for Israel, no, that's not according to the scripture. Verse 4, "Now consider how great this man was, to whom even the patriarch Abraham gave a tenth of the spoils." So tithes were given to Melchizedek, the Word, Christ, as the priest of God before the Levitical priesthood was established. Now we read that God gave his tithes, these are my tithes, but I give it to the Levites and the priesthood. So God gave his tithes to Levitical priesthood. After the destruction of the temple in 70 AD, tithes continued to be given, even though there wasn't a tabernacle. Hebrews chapter 7, verse 5. "And indeed, those who are the sons of Levi who receive the priesthood have a commandment to receive tithes from the people according to the law, that is, from their brethren." And like we read, that the tithes were given to the Levites by God. So he's saying, okay, so we've got the priesthood. I command that my tithes be given to the priesthood, God says. Now it says, chapter 8, Hebrews 8, verse 1, says, "Now this is the main point of the things we're saying." Okay, let me just explain it. "We have such a high priest who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens." Melchizedek was the high priest. When the Levite structure was established, God says the tithes go to the Levites for the work of the temple. It says, now we have a high priest who is sitting at the right hand of God. We still have the priest. I still have my tithes that I claim, God says. And who do they go to? They go to the high priest. It says, verse 2, "A minister of the sanctuary of the true tabernacle, which the Lord erected, not man." Now, God's tithes go to the high priest who erected a true tabernacle. What is he talking about? Matthew 16, 18, Christ says, "I will build my church." I will erect the church. And the gates of hell won't prevail against it. So he's the minister of the church that he established, and he still receives the tithes, but as God said to the Old Testament, I don't really have need for the goats and the tenth of your flock or your grain or whatever. I'll give it to the Levites. Now Jesus gives it to those who do the work. We read last time Matthew 10, verse 7, "Go and announce to them the kingdom of heaven is near." And he told the disciples, "Don't take any money with you, for those you help should feed and care for you." And we read the scriptures last time about those who serve the spiritual things should receive the physical things in order to do the work, in order to preach the gospel of the kingdom of God, and in order to feed the flock. So the tithe is still there. Before talking about the further tithe, the second tithe, let's talk about what one's increase is. Deuteronomy chapter 14, 22 says, "You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year." People do all kinds of things with the Bible, whatever pleases them. There are many, I've actually read papers that have said it's a sin to tithe. People can say anything they want. There are those that say, well, you only have to tithe on your grain or your produce, and today, since we're not producing grain or produce, we don't need to tithe. Well, I'll show the fallacy of that here in just a moment. But he says, basically, tithe on the increase of what you make. The English word increase in the Hebrew means gain, that which you've gained, your fruit, your product, or your income. And it refers to an increase in the net worth resulting from productive effort. In farming, you get the net proceeds of the crop. You have to You've got cost for seed. You've got fertilizer. You've got hired labor to gather in the crops. All that is expense that goes into it. If you're a modern day farmer, you've got fuel and you've got a lot of different expenses, and you tithe on the net increase because you have to pay off all these other people, and it's not an increase for you. For a wage earner or one that's salaried, the increase essentially is the amount after taxes. For self-employed, the increase is the amount of annual profit, not the gross. If you've got a business and you have to pay, say you've got a place, you're paying $800 a month for your store, and then you've got supplies, you've got people you need to pay, you've got these expenses that come in, your increase that you come after that, your profit, is the tithable amount. I want to read a statement from the Council of Elders, and this was May of 1996, and this is from the United Church of God. And if you go to some of the other websites from some of the other Church of God groups, I've seen it, they say essentially the same thing. So it's, I think, a fairly good consensus about the application or the administration of tithing. So this says, as a result of questions about the administration of tithing, the Council of Elders has approved the following statement. The statement deals with an administrative area, tithing on net income, but not doctrinal aspects of tithing. You can't fool with God's law, but how we apply God's law in an administrative sense is certainly appropriate. The United Church of God and International Association is committed to the belief that tithing is commanded for Christians today. Church of God has needed to make decisions from time to time regarding the administration of tithing. There are many factors that demand such decisions be made. Our modern world creates situations and circumstances that require we address how to administer the doctrine of tithing. And it goes on to say that in 1982, Mr. Armstrong made certain decisions regarding brethren in some of the European countries that were extremely heavily taxed. And essentially, you know, at that, there were some that literally were taxed at about 70%. And so if you do your first tithe on the gross and your second tithe on the gross, and you end up with like nothing to live on. So a decision needs to be made regarding the administration, not the doctrine of tithing. Mr. Armstrong subsequently applied this principle to other nations. Our modern system of economics is quite different from that of biblical times. Furthermore, our system of taxation has a greater impact on wages and salaries than in previous ages. If we take into account the various forms of taxation, such as income tax, sales tax, value-added tax, property tax, social security tax, and so forth, the burden is often oppressive. The church recognizes the confiscatory nature of such taxation. Therefore, the Council of Elders has adopted the following proposal. So this is our basic statement. While the church acknowledges the validity of God's law of tithing, it also recognizes the excess levels of taxation and their impact on individual incomes. Church believes that the appropriate definition of increase is net income after income tax. Therefore, the church teaches that the tithe may be calculated on the net after income tax has been deducted. Of course, members are free to tithe on the gross income before taxes are deducted. If so, they so choose, they're free to make contributions above their tithes as an expression of God's way of giving. Bottom line is, it's a personal matter before God. Nobody checks to see, you know, what your percentage is, or, you know, what you're paying or whatever. It's a matter of obedience and faith before God. And we don't make a list of rules on how to calculate it. And people, you know, discuss it and say, well, what do you think on this and that? We can discuss it, but we don't, you know, have the list of, well, this is exactly, you know, and you end up counting your mint, you know, and your And those little tiny seeds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You know, God looks at the heart, and he knows who you are and what you do and why you do it. So tithing is a law, but the church is not going to regulate your personal relationship before God. Let's talk now about this other tithe. When people are first introduced to the truth and they hear about tithing, and most people will say, yeah, okay, I understand that. Tithing is a law of God. And then you talk about second tithe. What? It's a second tithe. No, we got to tithe 20%? Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy chapter 16. I title this actual sermon is The Blessing of the Tithe Part 2. Because it's the blessing of the tithe. And this second tithe has been a tremendous blessing personally in my life for the last almost 58 years that I've been tithing and obeying God. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 3 says, you shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days when you've gathered from your threshing floor and from your wine press. So do we keep the Sabbath? Yes. People look and say, well, we need to keep the Sabbath, but, well, the holy days are there, so don't we need to keep the holy days also? Well, yes, the conclusion is, and so people want to keep the holy days and said, all right, if you want to obey me, verse 14, and you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son, your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, the Levite, stranger, fatherless within your gates, you shall rejoice. That's one of those commands. You are going to be happy, whether you like it or not. Okay. But he says, I'm going to provide a way for you to just kind of give you something special. I'm giving you a special blessing. Verse 15, 7 days you'll keep a sacred feast to the Lord, your God, in the place which the Lord chooses. Because the Lord your God will bless you in all your produce and all the work of your hands so that you surely rejoice. And he says, associated with keeping my feasts is a blessing. It's a rejoicing. It's a time to lift you up physically, relationally, spiritually. I think we'll talk a little bit about that a little later this evening, about the physical things you enjoyed, the relationships that you built, and the spiritual things that we learn from the feast. In verse 16 says, 3 times a year, in these three seasons, shall all your males appear before the Lord your God in the place he chooses, unleavened bread, Feast of Weeks, Pentecost, and Feast of Tabernacles. They shouldn't appear before the Lord empty-handed. You don't just show up at the feast and say, well, here I am. I don't know how I'm going to eat. Don't know where I'm going to stay. You prepare for it. God is not the God of credit. Put it on my credit card and hopefully I can pay it back before next year comes. Now he says, look, we'll set aside some certain money so you can go rejoice and enjoy the blessings. Deuteronomy chapter 14. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain the field produces year by year. And again, it's not just for farmers. This is just giving an overall statement. When you get an income, when you get an increase of whatever it is that you produce, then here's what to do with it. Verse 23, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. Place he chooses. We're not talking about at home unless there's a feast in your local area. And he says, the tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, the first of your herds and flocks. It's kind of like in the New Testament, Jesus mentioned, you know, when somebody says, so what, you know, obey the commandments, he said to the young man. He said, what? In Christ's name, several of them, enough to get the point. It's the same thing with here. He's not giving, okay, you only have to tithe if you raise goats or whatever. If you don't raise goats, you don't have to tithe. No, that's not what he's saying. He's giving an overview. And he says that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. You know, when God says, the tenth is mine, it's holy, I give it to the Levites, don't rob me. We should fear, not fear to rob God. Okay, and here, fear God by going to the feast and obeying him and saving to be able to do it. Verse 24, but at the journey, again, he's talking about not something that happens locally on a regular basis, but if you have to travel to where the feast site is. So if the journey is too long for you, so not able to carry the tithe. And if you've got an animal or a bag of grain or whatever that is your tithe, and it's a long way, he said, well, you can turn it into cash and then pay people as you go along to the feast. Or the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, and the Lord your God has blessed you. Again, there's a blessing that comes with obedience to God. Then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money in your hand. Go to the place the Lord your God chooses. And this is the odd part, you know, where it says, verse 26, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires. Very different from that first tithe that says, tithe is mine, don't rob me. Okay, and I choose to spend it to do the work that I have commissioned for preaching the gospel and for feeding the flock. But you save this tenth, because that's holy to me too, I'm giving that to you to spend the way that I want you to. Otherwise, you wouldn't do that, chances are. You know, you all, you've been around the church any length of time, and I know Jim doesn't like to travel, but I'll tell you, you get so much opportunity. You know, I've literally been in all, most places in the world that I want to go, but a lot of places I just don't care to go. And I'm not a wealthy individual. I'm a tither. And when you spend, you know, you save that money as God says, and then you go to the Feast of Tabernacles, go to Unleavened Bread or if there's a travel involved there, whatever, it's a blessing that most people just don't do. So you spend that money for whatever your heart desires, basically, you know, for oxen or sheep or wine or whatever your heart desires. Eat before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. Rejoice! Enjoy it! It's a blessing I'm giving to you. You shall not forsake the Levite within your gates. He has no part nor inheritance with you. Now again, note the contrast. Numbers 18:24. It says, when the Israelites give a tenth of everything they make to me, I will give that tenth to the Levites as a reward. You Levites and your families may eat the food anywhere you wish. That's the first tithe for their daily subsistence, where they live, not the one that's the second tithe where they go. For it is your compensation for serving the tabernacle. This one says, you take this money and obey me and go to the feast. Build relationships, build your relationship with me, and have a good time. Enjoy. Not so bad, is it? Josephus in Antiquities of the Jews, a famous historian back around the time of Christ, He says, let there be taken out of your fruits a tenth besides that which you have allotted to give to the priests and Levites. There's a tenth besides to the priests and Levites, besides the doing of the work. This you may indeed sell in the country, but it is to be used in those feasts and sacrifices that are to be celebrated in the holy city. Most people went up to Jerusalem to keep the feast around that area. So it's to be celebrated in the holy city, for it is fit that you should enjoy those fruits of the earth which God gives you to possess, as may be to the honor of the donor. Let's ask another question. Did Jesus tithe? Would you even think that he might not have? I mean, Jesus never sinned. Robbing God is a sin. So, yes, he tithes. If it was money given to him for the people gave him to do the work or whatever, he tithed on that because it says to the Levites, you tithe. So, as a priest, he would have tithed. Would he have kept a second tithe? Luke chapter 2 verse 40. Remember, he grew up as a son of a carpenter, and people called him the carpenter. So he apprenticed with his dad. So I see Jesus as a young boy learning the trade. I mean, it's, what else would he do? He worked alongside his dad building whatever it is that carpenters built at that time. And he was quite accomplished by the time he started his ministry at the age of 30. And from what he produced, I think as a boy, his father paid him a portion that he had earned, and he would have tithed as a boy. You know, when I was 10 years old and I mow lawns or water the neighbor's fruit trees or whatever little odd jobs that I'd get growing up in the city, I tithed on that money at age 10. To even comprehend that Jesus wouldn't have. Don't think it's even a question. Luke chapter 2 verse 40. The little child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom. God's goodness was upon him. You could not imagine him not honoring his physical father and his father in heaven in every way. Verse 41. It says, every year Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the Passover feast. When he was 12 years old, they went to the feast as they always did. Always traveled to the feast at least two times a year. Possibly three at Pentecost. Verse 43, after the feast days were over, they started home, but the boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem. Yeah, they would, the families get together and they'd travel to Jerusalem to keep the feast from Galilee in this particular instant. So they went back as a group, and it's just, every once in a while, a parent forgets their kid. I remember in Reno years ago, one of the larger families took off and went home, and we were cleaning up the hall after, and we heard this noise in a cabinet, and one little kid's opened the cabinet door in the kitchen, and he was in there, and parents were home. They'd left him, so that's not, he got enough kids, and the hubbub and things. So anyway, know how that happened, but. So verse 46, so it was after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to and asking them questions. So Jesus was there for 3 days, just sitting around the temple, basically, talking to and asking questions of the people that were talking and making his comments at age 12. How did he take care of himself for 3 days? I don't see Christ as a beggar, putting out his hand and looking sad or whatever. I think, in my opinion, that's all it is, but my opinion, at age 12, he'd worked for his dad and he saved his tithe and he had some extra tithe money and he stayed over for a few days learning more about God. So, that's the way I see it. When his family went to the feast, what did the trip consist of? No, his family kept the feast every year, it said. It was quite a trip. And again, here's Joseph is a carpenter. So he wouldn't have a lot of grain and a lot of oil and, maybe a few animals, but probably not enough to make a tenth out of. So he tithed on his income from what he did. Why would he need to travel from the feast or to the feast 2 or 3 times a year was quite lengthy. From Nazareth to Jerusalem is 90 miles. That's if you can go through the place where the Samaritans were. They most oftentimes had to go around the long route. So the trip to keep the feast was 120 miles each way, at least 90 each way, walking with the group. And it's going to take a few days to get there. If you can, even average 20 miles a day, 12 days of travel and food and lodging, it's going to cost you. Your 8 days at Passover and unleavened bread, needing food and lodging, tabernacles, your 8 days, food and lodging. So the only way you can do it is to tithe. So yes, Jesus' family tithed. I know Jesus did because he didn't break the law. He didn't steal from his father. So how could they afford to go to Jerusalem during the feast? Deuteronomy 14:23, you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place he chooses to make his name abide. The tithe of your grain, wine, corn, oil, herds, flocks, and your cabinets that you build or tables or whatever it is that you make. That you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. John chapter 5 and verse 1. John 5 and verse 1. After this was the feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. From Galilee in this point, in this circumstance. John 7 verse 1, a little later, another feast came along. John 7 verse 1, after these things, Jesus walked in Galilee. Now the Jews' feast of tabernacles was at hand. His brothers said to him, depart from here and go to Judea. We're going up to Jerusalem to keep the feast as we're commanded. He hung back a little bit. Verse 10 of John 7, but when his brothers had gone up, he also went up to the feast. Continued obeying God's laws, undoubtedly tithing in the process. No question about it. And he either tithed or received tithes to get there, but he went to the feast on tithes like we do. Acts chapter 18, verse 21, you move into after Christ ascended to heaven, after he was crucified, you find God's apostles and members keeping the feasts. Acts 18:21, Paul took leave of them, saying, you must by all means keep this coming feast in Jerusalem. But I will return again to you, God willing. And he sailed from Ephesus. Ephesus, to Jerusalem is 650 miles. So how did he get there? Well, he had tithe money, and again, whether it was money that had been provided by the membership, and he saved his tithe on that, or people helped him on that, or from his tent making, sold the tent, he tithed on his increase. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 14. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 14. In the same way, the Lord gave the instruction that those who preach the gospel should get their living from the gospel. Okay, we could talk about other things regarding the tithe and from the Old Testament and so forth, but I think that gives a good summary of the blessing of the first tithe and the second tithe. Now, there's what is another tithe, and we'll talk about that next time. Actually, I'll do a little lead in scripture to it. There is the principle that needs to be applied. And again, you'll find the third tithe, and we'll talk about, you know, how people are taken care of today, basically. But Exodus 22:22, New Living Translation says, "You must not exploit a widow or an orphan." Okay, God's pretty dynamic on this. Verse 23, "If you exploit them in any way and they cry out to me, then I will certainly hear their cry. And my anger will blaze against you, and I'll kill you with a sword, and then your wives will be widows and your children fatherless. You choose not to obey me. You choose not to provide when somebody is truly in need of help. Then there will not be a blessing given to you. Contrarywise, he says, if you obey me, I will pour out you blessings to you. Verse 25, if you lend money to any of my people who are in need, do not charge interest as a money lender would." So, doesn't just talk about giving things away, as this society sometimes does in helping people be lazy or whatever. But anyway, we'll talk more about that. And actually what I'm going to do with that is to tie it in with the way that God is going to establish his kingdom in the beginning with the millennium, and how there are going to be a lot of poor people, and how God is going to handle that. And the same principle that's used in helping support those that are truly needy today.